Hello, everyone. I'm just really happy to be with you today and with those of you who are present calling in later, for all of you also on the subtle plane in the subtle realms. We are going to begin tonight with our meditation mantras on Kundalini, the Kundalini Dhyana Mantra, with Ramakrishna's prayer. And then we'll do a brief meditation on the practice we've been doing for the last couple of weeks, feeling the Sushumna Nadi, the central channel, and entering into the spiraling movement of Kundalini flowing through the chakras. And then we'll go into the main part of our class. And one of the topics we are going to talk about tonight, and I'm saying this because some of you have asked direct questions about it on the listserv, is that we'll be speaking about the process of purification and unfolding in the second chakra, the sexual chakra, as it's often called, although the second chakra is much more than sexual. It connects to a lot of different aspects of our subtle and physical being. So you can find yourself in a comfortable posture and feel the connection of the sits bones and the energy in the base. Feel the connection between your base and the earth, whether it's through connecting to the seat you're sitting on or actually connecting to the earth itself, feeling the presence of the grounding energy of earth. And as we speak, I want to ask us to imagine collectively that there are roots, real tree roots, that connect our subtle chakra out by our subtle mandala, the vortex of energy that we call the sangam, that's the virtual communicative realm we share. Imagine that there are subtle roots connecting all of us, each of us in our own place, and all of us as a group down into the energy of Earth, down into the core of the planet, so that even as we allow the Kundalini Shakti to rise through our practice, we're also constantly connecting to our ground, which of course is also her ground. And you can just take a moment to tune into your body, to notice any parts of your body where there's holding or tightness, to notice the flow of the breath, and to practice that most profound and powerful of meditations, which is to simply tune into the way the breath is flowing. And as you inhale, imagine that you draw in the energy that has been given out during the day in all your interactions, the conversations, the digestion of your food, what's going on in your home space right now, the interactions that you may have had at work, the political conversations that you've had or contemplated. Just imagine that you're drawing in the energy that you've given out into the world. And then think of sending back any energies that you have taken on from other people, from the city, from the invisible and often unquantifiable ways in which all of us take on the energy that's present in the collective field at this time. So we take back what we've given out. We give back what we've taken on. And we open ourselves to the protective current of our sangam. And if you have the mantras in front of you, you can chant along or just listen. This is the Kundalini meditation mantra. Dhyayet Kundalinim Devim Swayambulinga Veshtinim Shyamam Sukshmam Shristi Rupam Shristi Stiti Layatmikam Vishvatitam Jnanarupam Chintayet Urvavahinim Dhyayet Kundalinim Devim Swayambulinga Veshtinim. Let us contemplate the upward-flowing goddess Kundalini, wrapped around the self-luminous lingam in the root chakra, rising through the Sushumna, who is nectarian, who is subtle, who embodies creation, and who creates, sustains, and absorbs the universe into the self, who also transcends the universe, and who is wisdom itself. And I also want to say the English of the tantric hymn to Kundalini. The first verse of this text says, Kundalini is looking to liberate us from the cycle of birth and death. She is ever young, which means that, if you don't mind my commenting, that she's new in every moment. She's the origin of all holy texts, as well as of the seed syllables, including the seed syllables Om Aim Rim, Shrim, that we're practicing with in this class. In this world, yogis contemplate her through the mind. She is sometimes established in the words of holy beings, which means that Kundalini moves through teachings and is often transmitted through the words of the teacher. Let that auspicious one protect me so that I may attain divine union. O Mother, you are the primordial beloved of the Lord, and I, until you awaken within me, am a bound soul. I ask you to free me from within. I added that last line myself. And once again, let's consider these words of that great lover of the goddess, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. Inhaling, you can imagine these words being spoken to your internal energy, to the pulsation of life force that you experience through your breath, through your heartbeat. And also as the movements of energy, both in your Sushumna Nadi, in your spinal column, in your muscles, and as the emotions and thoughts that go through your mind, even as the pleasant and unpleasant sensations in your body, because in this moment we're considering Kundalini not only as the liberating force, the awakened force, but also as the life force itself, which is manifesting as everything inside our experience. O Mother, take your virtue and take your sin, and give me only pure love for you. Take your intelligence and take your dullness. Give me only pure love for you. Take your success and take your failure. Give me only pure love for you. Take the gains and losses that I think of as my own, but which actually belong to you, and give me only pure love for you. Take my clarity and take my confusion, and give me only pure love for you. Take my health and take my diseases, and give me only pure love for you. So you can begin now to become aware of the central channel, the Sushumna Nadi, flowing from the perineum at the base of the spine up through the center of the body as a slender channel of light, of energy that connects the base chakra, the root chakra, with the crown. And for those of you who, for whom this is natural, see if you can feel how she actually opens up from below the body, from that region of the subtle Muladhara chakra, below the actual physical body, and how she connects to the region above the crown. Feeling the ground beneath you as the body sinks into the seat. Feel how the breath sweeps upward with the inhalation and carries your awareness up through the central channel, up to the crown. And exhale, feel that you actually can feel the region in the center of the body. For some of you, it may be easy to feel that movement inside the spinal column. Both are real. Feel with the exhalation that the energy of Kundalini Shakti flows down from above the crown down to the region of the base. And begin to allow yourself to open to her flow as a spiraling motion, as she moves as coiled light flowing upward with the inhalation, flowing from the Muladhara at the base upward to the second chakra, there at the very core of the pelvis, exhaling from the second chakra so that your breath begins to open your awareness of this region. Then with the next inhalation, feeling that the spiraling Kundalini Shakti rises up to the Manipura, to the region just behind the navel. And with the exhalation, feel that the breath begins to expand and open your sense of that part of your body, that part of your subtle body. Inhaling, sense Kundalini flowing up into the heart. Exhale and sense the heart energy expanding. Inhale and feel Kundalini rising up into the region at the base of the throat. Exhaling, feel this area opening. Feel yourself becoming more sensitized to the fifth chakra. With the next inhalation, as your breath flows into the throat, feel that sense of energy expanding upward into the region above the palate to the sixth chakra. Inhaling and exhaling into the region in the center of the head, sensing the energy flowing in and out through the sixth chakra. And then with the next inhalation, see if you can feel the energy rising up through the crown of the head. And become aware of the region beyond the head, the region over the crown. Inhale and exhale for a moment with your attention located in the crown region. And then with your next exhalation, feel that the energy, the golden light energy of Kundalini Shakti flows down from the crown through your head, through your brain, down through your neck and chest and shoulders and arms, down to your heart. Inhale and exhale with the feeling that the light of Kundalini is expanding through your heart. And with the next inhalation, begin to allow the mantra Om Aim Hrim Shrim to flow into the heart. And with the exhalation, allow the light of Kundalini Shakti to flow downward into the third chakra, to the region below the navel, just around the navel. And allow yourself to feel the region around the solar plexus vibrating with each inhalation and exhalation as you think Om Aim Hrim Shrim. With the next exhalation, see if you can sense the light of Kundalini flowing down into the second chakra, into the region in the center of the pelvis. And with Om Aim Hrim Shrim, allow the energy to expand through your whole pelvic region. with the next exhalation, sense the energy flowing down into the base chakra, into the Muladhara. And with Om Aim Hrim Shrim, inhale and exhale, having the feeling that Kundalini Shakti is now flowing through your entire lower body, through your genitals and rectum, down through your hip joints, through your legs and feet, into the earth. And then with the next inhalation, allow the light of Kundalini to sweep up from your feet, up through your whole body, with Om Aim Hrim Shrim, up to the crown. And then feel as though, with the exhalation, that light flows down, falls down from the crown, irradiating your body. And just for a moment or two, allow your sense of Kundalini as light to rise and fall with the breath. Om Aim Hrim Shrim, as the energy rises with the inhalation. Om Aim Hrim Shrim, as it flows back down through your body, through your toes into the earth with the exhalation. And you can, if you like, open your eyes. One of the beautiful conversations about having these conversations in this way is that you don't have to open your eyes. You can do this whole class in a state of meditation. As we move forward with our conversation about Kundalini Shakti, I want to just briefly touch on the fact that there are really a few paradigms around Kundalini. You know, the idea of Kundalini as the light that flows through the center of the body, through the spinal column, the chakras, are a very, very tempting organizational principle that has inspired many people, especially contemporary writers with a psychological and spiritual understanding, to create theories around how human consciousness functions in the different chakras. And as with all this kind of subtle information, my feeling is that it is both true and not true. There are teachers who say that the chakras aren't real, and certainly from the absolute point of view, the point of view of absolute non-duality, there is no such thing as chakras, or indeed as anything else except the endlessly flowing undulation of energy, consciousness and energy that flows as whatever is in this world. But for us on the journey, the chakras are very real, and they form an actually very beautiful way of understanding some of the experiences that occur to us in the process of awakening. But it's also true that the different traditions describe the inner journey in a couple of key ways, and one of them is as the ascension, as the rising up from so-called lower centers to higher centers. Another paradigm that is often used in the traditions and also very much in the kind of alchemical traditions of Western esotericism is the paradigm of the three centers, the belly center, which corresponds to the really second and third chakras in the chakra system, the heart center, and the center in the head, the Ajna chakra, which is sometimes called and these three centers are sometimes called the moving center in the belly, the emotional center in the heart, and the intellectual center in the head. And as you can hear from this language, the three centers paradigm is kind of a human paradigm. In other words, it doesn't so much bring our attention to the subtlety of that the chakras imply, but more about the way in which our human energy is organized instinctually. And of course, there are other paradigms, and one which is also one of the yogic paradigms that describes the journey as being something like unpeeling the layers of an onion. The most common version of this is, of course, the four bodies paradigm that we've spoken about earlier, and also the idea of the five sheaths that cover the soul, the physical sheath, the three subtler levels or layers, which are known as the pranic sheath or the energy sheath, the mental sheath, which consists of the mind and the thoughts in the mind and the constructions of mind, and then the what's called the intellectual sheath, that is the knowledge sheath, which is that layer of us that's actually able to stand outside our mental and physical constructions. And then finally, the subtlest layer, which is called the bliss sheath, and which is that quality in consciousness that can experience love and contentment. All of these sheaths being, in a certain sense, layers that we travel through in this paradigm until we come to the great light, which has no layers, but is simply pervades everything. And another one of the paradigms that we'll talk about later, which talks about the way Kundalini transforms our being, talks about knots. In Sanskrit, the word is granti. The knots being associated with the three main centers in the body. And the one at the base of the spine, at the Muladhara chakra, is called the knot of Brahma. And it has to do with our identification with materiality, with our material body. what we see as we talk about these different paradigms is that they all kind of work and they all describe our experience in different ways. So in almost all the traditions, the process of transformation is described as the process of cutting the knots. And by knots, what we actually mean is the contractions or the constrictions in the different aspect, the different parts of our physical, subtle, and subtler bodies. So these knots are experienced as tensions in the physical body. In the somatic and core energetic ways of working on ourselves, the physical tensions are understood to be connected to subtler tensions, emotional tensions. So as the knots are released and opened, characteristically, and again, all the traditions say this, our buried stuff, our buried ideas about ourselves are seen and released. And the knot of Brahma, this knot at the base of the spine, Brahma being the masculine aspect of that power by which Shakti manifests our embeddedness in matter, the knot of Brahma is, in my experience, that essential contraction that makes us believe that the only reality is the physical world, and that who we are is our physical body. You know, all those beliefs that every one of us holds, no matter how much we know better, like I'm fat, or I'm strong, or I'm sexy, or I'm sick, or my back hurts, are powered by that aspect of Shakti that manifests separation, that manifests what is sometimes called our embeddedness in matter. Since one of the truths that we come to recognize is that there is absolute correlation between the physical expression of Shakti as a body and the subtler expression of Shakti, we never want to say that the experience of our physicality is less, quote, real than our subtler experiences. But nonetheless, it's tremendously important in our journey that this knot, which makes us believe so absolutely in our physicality, is that the release of this knot is, as many of you know, utterly critical to spiritual progress, because unless it starts to open, we are going to always feel separate from the invisible realm, from the invisible forces that exist within us and that are also constantly offering us support. We'll talk about the other two knots as we go on, the knot of Vishnu in the heart and the knot of Rudra in the center of the head. So don't worry that I forgot about them. So one of the first things that begins to change as Kundalini starts to rise out of the Muladhara chakra is the strongly embedded belief that reality is simply the physical world. And depending on our state at a given time, you know, sometimes we are more able to experience the subtle realms than others. And that's, of course, one of the reasons why meditation is so important. We begin to be more and more able to recognize how the subtle divine forces around us are impacting us, awakening us, and helping us both from inside and from outside. And what that means is that we actually start to be able to receive the support, the divine support, the subtle support that always wants to be present for us. It's flowing towards us from every part of the universe. In Rumi's famous, beautiful phrase, I've been forgetful every moment, but never has this flowing towards me stopped or slowed. But also, and this is, of course, part of what Kundalini reveals to us, which is also utterly present to us from inside. And this sense of presence, of invisible help, whether we experience it as coming from inside or from outside, is both universal, what's sometimes called impersonal, that is, it has no face or name or form, it just is. It's also personal. It's also, for me, I've discovered that recognizing it as personal, recognizing it as a form, as a being which can be named and tuned into, has been enormously important. And I think that part of what the awakening of Kundalini allows us to do is actually celebrate the fact that divine presence is both inside and outside, and to start to actually become very attuned to the ways in which this presence flows through us. So I'd like to just presence a form of Kundalini that those of you who've studied with me a lot and who've practiced with goddess energies a lot have experienced your connection to. It's the presence that in the wisdom goddess tradition we call Bhuvaneshwari, whose name literally means the lady who holds space for all the worlds. And to me, this subtle feminine holding presence epitomizes both the compassion of divine presence in her feminine form, but also the presence that is constantly pulsing and vibrating gently through every atom of reality. So she not only holds us from inside, she also vibrates in the world around us and embraces us from everywhere. She's viscerally loving us through every particle of the air, and she's loving us from inside the cells of our body. And this is one of the abilities that we receive as we become more and more awake to the pulsation of Kundalini, not just inside our spine, but actually acting in our life. So as you sense into the pulsing energy that's literally living our life, breathing us, and as you sense the shifts and changes that are going on in your life, you might keep widening your awareness to sense that you're held and contained at every moment by this divine motherly presence. No matter how dense or confused we may feel at any given moment, Kundalini, as the universe, is always loving you. And you can personify her, as I love to do, as Bhuvaneshwari, or as Kuan Yin, or as Ma, which is the kind of non-sectarian way of calling on her. And also recognize, and this is going to be important as we go on to the next part of our class, also recognize that inside this Bhuvaneshwari energy, inside this holding energy, is also the presence which can hold us as we work with, as we practice with the karmic issues that come up in the course of our journey. We're going to spend some time this week talking about the second and third chakras especially, and also about some of the ways that we experience Kundalini transformation on this journey. And we're also going to have some time for questions. In the past 50 years, as people with psychological background have become interested in Kundalini, there have actually been a number of studies, a lot of PhD theses, done on what this phenomenon means for different people. One of the best ones, it's fairly old now, but some of you may be interested in it, is called Energies of Transformation. It's by a woman named Bonnie Greenwell. And she actually did a series of surveys and saw that there are about 169 different changes that people report when Kundalini is awakened. Most of them, interestingly enough, fall into what in the tantras is called the yoga of what's called Kundalini Maha Yoga. It's called Maha Yoga because, according to the tantras, and this is definitely my personal experience, and I think probably your experience, those of you who've had an awake Kundalini for a while, as Kundalini awakens, it begins to unfold as the six major yogas that the Indian and Tibetan traditions talk about as the practices that people do to experience union with the divine, but which, as Kundalini awakens, actually begin to occur with a little help from our practice in a more or less spontaneous fashion. And these are Hatha Yoga, Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Mantra Yoga, Raja Yoga, and Laya Yoga. And I'm going to just say a little bit about them today and we'll talk about them a little bit more as we go on. I'm offering them to you because it's just interesting to look at your experience in these terms. So the spontaneous Hatha Yoga is many of you are experiencing as the shakings and pranayamas, etc., that occur. The openings of the chakras are actually a part of the spontaneous Hatha Yoga. And of course, some people experience literally Hatha Yoga asanas that they may not have known how to do before happening. Bhakti Yoga, the yoga of devotion, is the awakening of all the different forms of love, including personal feelings of love for some form of the divine, but also deeper feelings of connection with people in your life, even an ability to see the divinity in your family and your friends, which is really huge, powerful expression of Kundalini's awakening. Mantra yoga, of course, is the enlivening of the mantras that you, many of you guys are experiencing, and also as the purification of speech, the opening of our capacity for speaking powerfully. It can also manifest as spontaneous mantras arising in meditation, which is why I always tell you that if you start to find yourself spontaneously repeating another mantra than the one you're supposed to be using, to just go with it, because it is actually a gift of the spontaneous mantra yoga. And Raja Yoga is the spontaneous meditation, the gift of being able to turn the mind inward and focus inwardly. Laya Yoga is actually the essence of the most esoteric Kundalini experience, because Laya means dissolution, and Laya, spelled L-A-Y-A, is the experience that many of you share of entering into the subtle field of your inner world through dreams, through meditation experiences, that beautiful experience of the Kali Chakra, the Kali Yantra that Stephanie shared last week is actually a Laya Yoga. It's an expression of Laya Yoga, where suddenly the esoteric inner world starts to open up. And the shifts that come about through Karma Yoga, which is part of what I want to talk about today, include many of the functional daily life changes that come up in our path as Kundalini unfolds and starts to purify our karmas. These 169 types of changes, physical, emotional, mental, and also changes in the way you act, are all expressions of the spontaneous karma yoga. And most important, as karma yoga begins to unfold in your life, what begins to happen, as it has for so many of you, is that your normal life experience, the unfolding of your relationships, your career life, your interactions with the world, actually become your path. They actually become recognizable as part of your soul's journey. So, in other words, stuff no longer seems accidental. The encounters that you have with others no longer seem like, you know, stuff that shouldn't be happening. You start to be able to recognize them as opportunities to live your life as karma yoga. One of my friends shared an experience with me that I've thought about often over the years, because I think it's very typical of what it means when the spontaneous karma yoga starts to occur. She was, you know, thinking to herself one day, she'd been at satsang and people had been sharing some beautiful experiences, such as some of you have been sharing. And as some people wrote in, she was, you know, feeling kind of left out and insufficient, because she had actually, in I think the 6 years she'd been practicing with an awake Kundalini, she had never had any of these experiences. And she was thinking, well, maybe my Kundalini isn't awake. Maybe, you know, I'm just you know, more asleep than everybody else. And then as she was driving, she was suddenly aware of this dark, leaden feeling in her body. And it just came for about a minute, and then it disappeared. And with it, a recognition that this leaden feeling, which was, you know, kind of a almost chemical depression, that this feeling, which had been utterly characteristic of her life before she began doing spiritual practice, was no longer her experience. In other words, that she was experiencing a complete shift in the attitude that she had towards her own life, from being down, depressed, and kind of darkened to a recognition of the light and the interesting nature and, you know, the basic positivity of her life. So this is an example of how karma yoga works in your life. The karmic backpack that you've been holding, which may have created, you know, these kind of biochemical experiences of life, literally begins to shift and your life takes on a different quality. Your relationships shift. You begin to be able to make new choices. Kundalini begins to reorganize your concepts about reality, including a lot of the ideas that society has downloaded into us. So many of you have been experiencing these changes for years, and there are those of you to whom this is new. You know that while these are happening, it often feels as though new parts of us are being born. Familiar parts of us are falling away. And what I think is one of the most significant aspects of Kundalini, let's call it purification, is the way that she subtly shifts our center of consciousness so that we begin to be able to step out of purely personal desires, being centered completely in our family and personal relationships, and actually begin to recognize our connection not only to people in our circle, but also to begin to realize that our personal journey is not just for ourselves, but it's actually part of the evolution of consciousness, that the work we do on ourselves is helping the whole. And what this means in my life, and I know for so many of you, when pain is released, when something comes up and we witness it and let it go, when our inner wounds are healed or dissolved, we can sometimes get the intimation that it's not just our personal wounds being dissolved. It's often the wounds that have been held in our family lineage for perhaps generations, and that are locked into the DNA of our particular social group. So the more these concepts, these wounds, these ways of thinking get seen and released in the field of Kundalini, the more our journey actually becomes really a journey that frees not just us, but our entire family and social group in ways that we may not know at the time, but which has an incredibly profound effect on the people in our lives. And one of the ways we begin to know this is happening, or two ways in which we begin to know this is happening. First, we begin to realize that certain events and relationships arising in our present life are actually expressions of old repetitive patterns that may have been happening in different ways throughout our life or throughout our family life. And then we also begin to realize that little by little, the external world around us, the way, not, not just the way we feel, but the way other people react to us and relate to us is also changing. So that the hard knots of our relationships and the way in which the world reflects back to us also starts to change. It sometimes very subtly, sometimes rather dramatically. You know, we might experience that that a parent who we've been unable to get along with, or who has, you know, seemed not to love us, actually has what feels like a change of heart. And we realize that what's happened is that we've had an internal change of heart ourselves, and it's being reflected in the outer world. And sometimes this works in the opposite way. Some very, very dramatic challenge may come from the world outside. And as we meet the challenge and work with the challenge, we may recognize that it is, in a certain sense, the last gasp of a karmic knot that is coming up so that we can see it and actually act within that situation differently than we might have in our lives. And that in meeting that challenge, we realize that a pattern of acting has been released. So you can allow the breath now to flow vertically, the inhalation rising up through the central channel up to the crown, the exhalation flowing down towards the base. Om Aim Hrim Shrim. Flowing naturally. And with the inhalation, see if you can feel that the breath is rising up through the center of the spinal column. Flowing in a very focused way through the inside of the inside of your spine. And the exhalation is flowing down from the crown through the spine, down into the base. See if you can feel the divine feminine transformative energy of Om Aim Hrim Shrim to kindle the awareness of this subtle thread of energy moving not only through the center of the body, but actually through the center of the spinal column. And see if, as I say the next piece of this conversation, see if you can let your awareness flow inside the center of the spinal column. Not worrying too much if you, quote, get it right, but just allowing this to be a way of centering your energy. So, one of the aspects of Karma Yoga, the transformation of our ways of thinking and acting, which is perhaps the most efficient way that our karmic wounds get healed in this lifetime, is that every time a new infusion of Shakti comes into us, it will hit, in general, one of the knots in our subtle body. And generally speaking, we'll experience some layer of our karmic backpack that might have been buried and that is now being invited to flow, to come forth, to be seen and allowed to dissolve. Sometimes these transformations go on in dreams or, you know, almost unconsciously. Sometimes they come up as experiences of sadness or anger or jealousy that really feel a little bit overwhelming. And that's especially true when the energies are moving in the second and third chakras, as we'll talk about in a couple of minutes. And most of the, let's say, skillful methods for working with these tendencies, which are talked about in most of the modern spiritual traditions, are really flavors of the particular process that the tantras talk about as witness consciousness. In other words, the secret to working with the tendencies, the real secret of karma yoga, actually, is to learn how to be present to the feelings, whether they're ecstatic or uncomfortable, without identifying them as me. And I think almost all of you know this because most of you have done quite a bit of spiritual practice and listened to a lot of teachers. But what I want to say here is that this is really the work of partnering with Kundalini, learning how to allow her to do her work while disidentifying with the physical, mental, and emotional experience that is being triggered by the movement of Kundalini. And it's the reason that this is the work is because, as you know, the most deep-seated tendency of all is our tendency to identify with the physical body and with our thoughts and feelings. I would say that even more than identifying with the body, we identify with thoughts, with emotions. So in order to allow this cleansing process of karma yoga to happen, we actually do need to be willing to keep returning ourselves to an inquiry process that lets us become present to the witnessing awareness, the knowing presence, the embracing consciousness that is always present to our inner and outer experience. And in the tantric tradition, in the Kundalini tradition, I have found that it's unbelievably helpful to identify this knowingness not with some impersonal witness who's divorced from our feeling sense, but actually with Goddess, with Bhuvaneshwari, with that embracing, knowing presence that we mentioned earlier. So, in other words, to begin to realize that being aware of awareness allows us to recognize what's arising in our emotional body or physical body without judgment and without bypassing or trying to prematurely detach ourselves from it, but actually recognizing that the Bhuvaneshwari energy, the embracive, compassionate goddess energy in our own field, which is both around us and inside us, so to speak, is actually able to hold discomfort within herself such that we can notice it, feel it, and this is really important, feel it, let go of the ideas we may have about it, and by witnessing and holding it, allow it to be released by the dynamic power inside awareness. So in other words, Bhuvaneshwari represents that awareness which both witnesses our personal mind, emotions, and physicality, and also contains within itself the power to alchemize, to dissolve that in our experience which binds us to identifying with our limitations. And as you know, these qualities cannot be dissolved by trying to push them away or by trying to disengage from them deliberately. They dissolve by our willingness to be present with every aspect of our being, to hold it and to allow the grace inside awareness to dissolve it. This is the gift Kundalini Shakti gives us on the subtlest level. And this is how we can partner with Kundalini in allowing this process of transformation to occur. So, in a certain sense, opening to the Bhuvaneshwari presence as awareness and as the holding and alchemical grace inside awareness actually gives you and I a platform where we can sit, so to speak, while to hold and also to allow the possibility of liberation from whatever it is that comes up in our karmic drama, in our karmic unfolding. And what I've always found, and it's one of the reasons why mantra practice is so significant, is that when certain intense feelings are arising, and it's very hard to simply sit with them with the sense of letting them be embraced by awareness, practicing with the mantra can literally infuse an extra dose, let's say, of divine energy, of gracious energy, of loving energy into the uncomfortable bad feelings. You know, when an uncomfortable feeling feels overwhelming, you know, whether it's grief or loss or anger, when it feels too overwhelming to just let be there, the mantra will literally start to act as a kind of a cleanser for your consciousness. It begins to infuse gracefulness into the contracted thickness, the density of emotional upheaval. And mantra practice, I've found, actually gives us an alternative to acting out, which is very helpful in difficult moments when it's hard to restrain yourself from screaming or weeping inappropriately, or some of the other ways in which a karmic upheaval can begin to create new karmas for us. So a judicious use of mantra and also being really committed to spending time sitting with a karmic upheaval is unbelievably effective in the process of allowing Kundalini to transform you. And, you know, to access awareness, we of course use different practices like asking, who is it that knows I'm feeling this? Or who am I really? Or where is that aspect of the divine that can help me hold these feelings? These forms of self-inquiry can really trigger our connection to the pure awareness grace. And all of these are aspects of spontaneous karma yoga. That is, learning how to work with the karmic tendencies that are going to arise often faster than they ever would without the grace of Kundalini, so that they can begin to really dissolve and liberate you. We're going to begin to talk about the ways in which the karma of karmic release happens in the second and third chakras. And in that process, I want to flag one more of the, let's call it gifts of unfolding Kundalini, which is the willingness to recognize subtle guidance. And I know that for all of us, the question of how can I access inner guidance is a crucial, critical question in the spiritual journey. And it's one of the reasons why I ask you in these courses to do contemplations in which you ask a question of the Shakti and then just write what comes up, because it's that kind of practice is what lets you become aware of how the subtle guidance is occurring. It's one of the ways that we begin to sense the difference between the discerning impulse that is guidance from the Shakti and the impulses that come from, let's say, the mind or emotions or our old tendencies. And this is something that for most of us needs to be learned. It needs to be practiced. One of the, I would say, most skillful ways of learning that is to start to ask ourselves questions like, what's really going on here? You know, for instance, when you feel an old feeling of unworthiness or shame coming up, or when someone in your life is ganging up on you or rejecting you or giving you uncomfortable feedback, and you notice that emotions are coming up in response to it, if you could ask yourself, okay, what's true here? And turn inside and really see what Shakti is showing you, then every situation, as I've said earlier, becomes a way to understand a little bit more about the old patterns that are being brought up to be dissolved. So this question, what's true? Is this really true? Is my feeling about this accurate, or is there something else happening? Is one of the ways to start to tune in to the felt sense of Shakti guiding you, and to realize also that Shakti doesn't necessarily guide you as a voice, which is one of the, I think, one of the myths that we have about inner guidance. For some people, it does come as a voice. But in my experience, the deepest forms of guidance from the Shakti are the forms of guidance that arise as nonverbal instinctual movements. Very often, when you learn how to follow guidance, it's almost as though you learn how to tune into the movement that is going on beneath your thought process, beneath your emotional process. The kind of thing that might come up when you ask yourself a question like, okay, what would love do now? Or, as one of my friends often uses this question, which I think is very cute, what would a really awake person do now? And when you ask yourself that question and just tune in to the felt sense of action, something arises that may not even have words, but which will lead you in a way that can help you meet challenges such that when you don't understand something, And you learn to ask inwardly, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to learn? What is the path here? What's the liberating understanding here? You actually start to be able to get answers. So I'm going to give you a homework assignment this week in which you do some more of this practice of asking Kundalini to give you the wisdom that you need to work with the situation in your life. And hopefully you'll begin to have the experience that wisdom can flow from the higher realms right through your fingers to the page. This connection, this ability to ask these questions like, what would love do now? Or what is the highest awareness I can have of this situation? Or what is Shakti trying to tell me? Or who am I really? This ability to ask powerful self-inquiry questions and thus become aware of that knowing awareness that's always there behind your mind is really important when purification is happening in the lower chakras. All of us, and this is really normal and important, are going to experience over and over again the purification processes of the second and third chakras. Because the second and third chakras, first of all, are very much part of the energy of human life, and especially our instinctual human life. And also because, as we've said earlier, the work of Kundalini is a spiral. So very often we'll find ourselves in extremely exalted states, and a day later or even a moment later, actually being, you know, having an intense attention to some wounded aspect of ourselves. And actually the reason this is so important is because it is our capacity to experience our, let's say, transpersonal self that actually gives us the framework to not bypass but to be present with the, let's say, more instinctual capacities, and that will ultimately end up integrating our all the different levels of ourselves in what is the true tantric awake state. So the second and third chakra. The second chakra, as we said last week, is connected to generativity, to sexuality, to human creativity, to healing, which is unbelievably important, and to the innate juiciness, the rasa of our life in this world. You know, the sense that's connected to the second chakra is a sense of taste, flavor, juiciness, and in my experience, the more connected you are with your second chakra, the more juicy your life is, the more pleasurable your life is. So it's actually very important to allow the second chakra to begin to flower in your life. The second chakra, as you know, is related to the element of water, to the oceanic quality of reality, and so it's both flowing and also changeable. The third chakra is related to fire, to personal will, to intention. And when you have a desire or intention, you can that's not just fantasy or wish. You can often feel this fire of the third chakra coming up in you, and it gets behind your actions, your manifestations in both karmic ways and in awakened ways. And so the third chakra is always connected to our capacity for action. And I also have discovered in my own life, and it's confirmed by some of the tantric texts, is that both of these centers are connected with two of the higher chakras. The fifth chakra at the throat, which is connected to the second chakra, and the sixth chakra at the center of the head. So when you're experiencing karmic upheavals in the second and third chakra, it can be very helpful to connect to the energy of the throat by practicing mantra, and also tuning into the sixth chakra energy, which is essentially the energy of the witness, the energy of awareness, of discernment. So let's just bring our awareness to the energy of the Swadhisthana, the second chakra. And we're going to inhale into this region. Find the, imagine a line that bisects the points of your hip bones, and then bring your awareness into the center of the body towards the back. If you're a woman, it's kind of just above the region where you feel your ovaries, right in the core of the pelvis. And if you're in tune with your second chakra, you might start to feel some kind of sexual pleasure or arousal here, and that's okay. That's what we're tuning into. So I want to use the images in some of the tantric descriptions to help us focus here. This is a meditation image, which means that it's symbolic, though it can be seen in meditation, but it's not supposed to be a literal description of what the second chakra looks like. It's actually meant to be a method for tuning into this subtle region. So it's a kind of a cognitive focusing device. And in this image, the second chakra is, you can imagine it here as a six-petaled flower, a lotus with deep vermilion red petals. So imagine this lotus in the very center of your pelvic region. And again, you don't have to do this visualization. These visualizations are not meant to, they're not meant to get you caught up in whether you're doing it right. It's really just a suggestion for focusing energy here. The vermilion in the second chakra is, of course, associated with the energy of sexuality. But in its center is a white moon-like region. So it's like a full moon, and it's the region of water. And in the diagrams of the chakras, it's shown as a circle, which of course is the planetary body that governs the tides, the menstrual cycle, and also very much the rise and fall of emotions in human life. So the Swadhisthana chakra is very much the center of flow and the center of deep emotions. And that means, of course, that a lot of our emotions are stored in the second chakra. When Kundalini awakens and we begin to experience her rising from the first chakra to the second chakra, she will often awaken sexual desire. And in fact, as you know, one of the tantric methods for arousing Kundalini is to kindle your sexual desire and to use that very intense energy of desire as a way of giving yourself the energy to draw Kundalini awake and upward into the Sushumna. And what I want to say at this moment is that as you focus on this region, sensing the vermilion red petals and this watery flowing region within the center, see if you can feel, as we were last week, the kind of deep oceanic quality of it. And see if you can allow yourself to just open to the experience of sensuality in this center as a phenomenon that is not crying out for expression, that is just opening you to the experience of subtle pleasure that is actually deeper than physical pleasure. Someone on who's in communication on the listserv shared that she's having a lot of sexual feelings in this chakra and has not been successful in drawing the sexuality upward. And I want to say that as this happens, and as this happens at this moment, if this is happening to you, rather than trying to draw it upward, see if you can have the feeling of this subtle pleasure associated with this chakra spreading, so that you feel it spreading through the whole lower body, through your pelvis, down into your legs and feet, and see if it wants to spread as a subtle feeling of pleasure or pulsation. See if it wants to spread upward, not necessarily as energy rising in your spinal column, but as an overall feeling of pleasure. And one of the ways to do this is simply to relate to it as a pleasurable feeling, which for many of us, because of the way we've been focused on sexuality as centered in our genital regions, for many of us, when we have these pleasurable feelings, they tend to want to flow downward and outward, so to speak. So just see if you can allow them, if they're present, to flow horizontally or in a kind of an expanding pattern, not only through your pelvis, but through the whole torso. Almost as though the energy of water, the energy of moon-like radiance is expanding through this region of your body and down through your legs and feet. It's just an experiment. Don't worry about getting it right. And of course, in the second chakra, and the process of awakening through the sexual feelings or the sensual feelings has traditionally been kind of a taboo subject, kind of dicey and problematical for spiritual people. And a lot of this has to do with old religious attitudes that separate sexuality and spirituality. And, of course, there's a whole tradition in which these sensual feelings are celebrated and let's say privileged in a way that is imbalanced in the other direction. But it's very interesting and important to start to recognize the not only the subtle sensual experience at this chakra, but also the psychological effects. And what I'd like to suggest to you is that you really think of the energy being activated as you do this meditation as an invitation to allow pleasure to not be associated simply with genital sexuality, but to start to spread through your body, to flow through your body, to be in a certain sense experienced as a moving force of pleasure that can in its deepest form literally rejuvenate your cells. So as I'm talking about the awakening in the sexual chakra, see if you can have this feeling. One of the ways that I've worked with this energy is to imagine that the goddess is alive inside me, kind of dancing through my body, making love to me from inside. And it's you can let her flow through your blood, flow through your bones, manifest in whatever way you feel comfortable allowing her to. So when you're having a lot of second chakra energy arising, when Kundalini is working a lot in this chakra, there are a couple of let's say, common and normal tendencies that occur in our physical and subtle lives, one of the things that often happens is that you project that awakened energy onto another person. And I've seen this in myself, I've seen this in all the spiritual communities that I've been involved in, that somebody starts to have an awakening in the sexual chakra, in the second chakra, and then immediately, because this is what we're used to doing, projects it onto somebody else and falls in love with that person or becomes infatuated with that person. And this will often, of course, result in a relationship that can feel incredibly intense. And sometimes almost impossible to work with, because it's so intense and it feels so instinctual. You know, it's really, in a certain sense, the awakening of that biological urge that brings us together. Very often such a relationship is short-lived, and very often it causes a fair amount of suffering, especially when it's unrequited or when there's a marriage to somebody else involved in it. And this suffering sometimes feels like it needs to be avoided through self-discipline, and I'm a great believer in self-discipline, in, you know, actually holding and being the witness to such an experience. Sometimes it actually has to be lived through. And when you're having such an experience that feels like it has to be lived through, it's always very important to use your power of discernment and ask yourself, is this really about this other person? Or is it the experience of energy moving in the chakra? Is there something that I need to understand about an old relationship pattern that I can better understand by holding the impulse, dealing with the fire of the projection without acting it out? And I'm not saying that acting it out is always a bad idea, but what I am saying is that it's very, very important to do this practice of discernment, because much of the time the energy does not actually need to be expressed in the physical world in order for the karma to be released. So, in other words, through self-inquiry and discernment, it is possible to actually release the karma of an old sexual or relational pattern. The second reason that it's important to be discerning in the process of opening the second chakra is that the sexual energy that's activated when Kundalini begins to work in this chakra is so valuable as a subtle substance that can power our deep meditation. So part of the practice of working with your second chakra activation is to learn how to cultivate the energy so that it rejuvenates the body. And I just gave you a practice for doing this, which is to tune into the second chakra and then to feel that energy spreading through the body. It's one of the really great gifts of awakened Kundalini, and I find that working with the goddess energies has been very helpful in this, is that it can allow us to learn how to manifest sexual energy, not just in the sexual organs, but throughout the whole body, so that we can start to really feel the pleasurable bliss of, you know, the subtle activation. In the yogic tradition, the sexual fluid is considered to be a physical form of the very subtle energy called ojas, which you may have heard this word before, which yogis in the Indian tradition and also in the Taoist tradition and Tibetan tradition learn to collect so that it will fuel Kundalini and draw you into deep meditation. And as many of you know, the yogic reason for practicing brahmacharya is actually to collect this energy and to use it in meditation, to cultivate it. what the yogic texts say is that when you spend this energy in physical orgasm, it's not available to be cultivated and drawn into deep meditation. And what I've discovered over the years is this doesn't mean you should never have an orgasm, simply that you should learn how to look into your sexual energy and learn to experiment with it, not in a repressive way, but really in a yogic way, to see how you can work with sexual energy for not only raising kundalini, but also for rejuvenation and healing. And another thing another esoteric truth about this center is that in the course of kundalini's unfoldment, you'll go through a phase when you start to feel the energy moving between the second and the fourth chakras. In other words, between the sexual center and the heart center. And it's one of the reasons why the relationships that the attractions that you have when kundalini awakens can be so powerful, because they tend to involve the fourth chakra. And one of the experiences that you can have when you consciously start to connect your second chakra energy with your fourth chakra energy, with your heart energy, is that the love you experience for an individual can start to be energized by the second chakra energy, so that the heart can be kindled by the Svadhisthana. In other words, when you connect the second chakra with the fourth chakra, you're actually connecting the very powerful instinctual energy of sexuality with the subtler energy of love in the heart. And it allows the activated sexual energy to begin to feed the energy of the heart, not for the sake of eliminating or denying sexuality, but allowing your sexuality to be part of the juiciness that we experience in love. And I want to share an experience that many of you may have had, which is actually considered one of the siddhis, one of the gifts of kundalini energy awakening the second chakra. When I first began experiencing this feeling of the sexual energy flowing into the heart, I actually basically lost interest in physical sex, and I entered into a period of my life where I was really completely celibate. And one of the reasons for it, which is kind of typical of nuns and yogis and others on a very internal spiritual journey, one of the reasons for it was that the energy in the heart was so alluring to me that it really wasn't interesting to me to have a physical relationship with another person. And then about 20 years later, as kundalini unfolded through the heart, which was, I would say, one of the main unfolding that occurred to me in the first 15 or 20 years of my practice, I suddenly began to feel a tension flowing down in my second chakra area, feeling a lot of pure sexual energy. But what I discovered was that as I let it unfold, instead of focusing in the heart, it began to connect with the throat chakra. And it was at a time when I was just starting to teach meditation. And what I would find happening is, and I didn't find it in any of the books until I finally read a reference in a book called Laya Yoga, which is a kind of a compendium of tantric texts on the chakras, and this second chakra energy would connect to the energy in the voice, and it would add this very enlivened and juicy quality to the voice with which I was teaching meditation. And as it turns out, in the tantras, it said that a classical experience of kundalini as it rises is that it transforms sexual energy into the subtle shakti of meditative transmission. In other words, when it's allowed to awaken through the second chakra and the energy is allowed to move without feeling that you have to discharge it, it will eventually rise into your fifth chakra in the throat region and begin to awaken your voice. And it's said that when this happens, it creates a capacity for spiritual energy to move through your words or through a mantra or through your or through chanting. It's one of the ways in which awakened Kundalini transmutes sexual energy into the ability to help others awaken in meditation. So the awakening of the second chakra is very crucial both to the awakening of the voice and to the awakening of the heart. And another way in which the awakening and the purification of the second chakra may be experienced is not only through infatuation and physical desire, but also through the recognition and sometimes the experience of our shame. Not just sexual shame, but a lot of very primal feelings of shame. According to the Chakra Nirupana, which is a fairly authoritative text on the chakras, one of the limiting emotions that's stored in the second chakra is the feeling of shame, which of course we all have, not just sexual shame, but every level of shame. Brené Brown, the contemporary writer, writes very beautifully about shame and the way in which it comes up for us in so many different ways. So if you can think of shame, of the arising of shame, as actually part of the purification of the second chakra, when it occurs to those of us who have this had this awakening, we can start to recognize that we actually have the capacity, as Kundalini begins to open us, to connect the second chakra to the energy of discernment in the sixth chakra and to ask ourselves, in what way is this experience of shame connected to the arising of an old tendency and not to anything I may have done? So in other words, when you feel one of these deep stored emotions, especially shame, which I think is actually one of the most destructive and disempowering stored feelings that any of us experience, you can tune into the energy of discernment, to the holding energy of Bhuvaneshwari surrounding you, to awareness holding you, and just ask yourself, who is it that knows I'm feeling this? Or how is this current feeling of shame connected to something very old? To ask yourself, wait a minute, is this about something that I've done or something that I am, or is it simply something to be purified, to be looked at, to hold these feelings, to widen your awareness so that you can be the witness, the holder of shame, and allow it to be dissolved in this goddess presence. And it's incredibly powerful what begins to happen as you do this, as you allow your infatuation or your shame or your jealousy, which is also a quality stored in the second chakra, to just come up and be held in awareness and dissolved. Even as you're tuning into the transformative power in sexual energy and allowing it to flow through your body as a pure quality of rejuvenation, the simultaneous purification of the stored tendencies in the second chakra, of the negative tendencies stored in the second chakra, and opening to the rejuvenating, liberating, and subtle, pleasurable aspects of the awakened second chakra is actually one of the ways in which we allow and partner with Kundalini to transform our instinctual life. So with a inhalation, see if you can begin to bring your awareness into the region behind the navel, to the region of the third chakra. And we're just going to tune in to the energy of the Manipura just for this moment, and then we'll go deeper into it in our meditations during the week. Inhaling, allow yourself to bring your awareness up to the region behind the navel. Exhaling, see if you can feel your energy flowing there. And imagine that there's a 10-petaled flower, a lotus with 10 petals just behind the navel. The petals are deep blue, and in the center of the lotus, there's a downward-pointing, bright red triangle, the triangle of fire. And for those of you who would like to activate the power in the third chakra, this visualization of the downward-pointing red triangle is an incredibly powerful way to center yourself in this chakra. The masculine deity of the third chakra is Rudra, who's a warrior form of the divine masculine. And Rudra's consort, who's called Rudrani, is a form of Durga, the warrior goddess. Your third chakra, your Manipura chakra, the word Manipura means city of jewels, is filled with the powerful energy of Durga, with the energy of fire. And Durga is the active mother. We could call her the tiger mom, whose strength and stability is the embodiment of divine will, and who's able to purify your personal egoic will, your personal feelings of ambition and desire and competition, such that they begin to be freed from the fear and anxiety and all the qualities that make desire egoic. So as you tune in to the Manipura chakra, imagine that you're focusing inside this fiery red triangle, and that within it is the purified will of the goddess Durga. Imagine that as you tune in there, as you offer the mantra Om Aim Hrim Shrim into this fiery triangle in the center of your body behind the navel, you ask the energy there, Kundalini, in her form as Goddess Durga, to begin to teach you how to make enlightened effort, how to bring your ideas and desires and your wishes to serve, to help, to protect into the world in an enlightened way. And as you breathe with the awareness of the Manipura chakra, imagine that in the center behind the navel, is this triangle and that within the triangle is an exquisite divine fire. It's the fire that's in the ancient cultures was called the sacrificial fire, the yajna fire, through which our prayers and wishes are taken to the higher realms. So at this moment, allow yourself to formulate an intention or a desire, one that's very important to you. Just ask yourself, what desire right now is most important to me, not necessarily a spiritual desire, but something that just really matters in your life, inner or outer. Just bring this desire into your awareness. And imagine yourself taking this desire into your hands in the form of a jewel. You're actually imagining a jewel that contains the full power of your desire. And imagine that this jewel is being offered into the fire in your navel. Feel that it's being received by the energy of the awakened third chakra. And ask, may this desire, no matter how personal or how universal, may this desire be worked out in such a way that it is for the benefit of all beings. Ask that all actions performed in the service of this desire be irradiated with the divine fire, the divine activity of the goddess, of the awakened energy of the third chakra. And now offer Om Aim Hrim Shrim. Into the fire. And allow the breath to center your awareness in that region behind the navel. See if you can feel the natural power of the awakened third chakra. Feeling the fiery red triangle as your center of action. And with your next inhalation and your next exhalation, allow yourself to notice how your body feels, how your mind feels. Inhale and exhale. Feel the energy of the third chakra of the fiery action triangle spreading through your whole lower body, moving up through your diaphragm, freeing the breath. And we're going to take a few moments to take a couple of questions. So those of you who feel awake and alert enough to ask a question, you can press star 7. We'll change into Q&A mode. Can press star 7. And if you have a question, you can ask it now. And if you're too deep inside meditation to ask a question, that's fine. We'll just see what wants to arise. Star 7, if you'd like to talk, if you'd like to ask a question.
Hey, Sally?
Yes.
Hi, it's Laura. I have you on earphones, my earbuds. Let me figure this out. Good evening.
Good evening. We can hear you.
I was wondering if you could describe more the discernment, the energy of discernment in the sixth chakra. And the reason that I'm asking is because for me, that feels very cerebral and busy. Mm-hmm. So I don't know it as an embodied kind of thing. It feels very wordy.
Okay, so.
And detached from my body.
Thank you for this question. So this is actually a very common experience when the sixth chakra is attached to the mind. So the deal is when you begin to tune into discernment at this level, begin by connecting your sixth chakra to the heart. And I'm going to suggest you do it energetically, so feel as though the breath is moving between the center of the head and the heart, so that you're actually tuning into your subtle body, not so much turning over questions in your mind. And this should actually re-embody your awareness so that it's not activated, it's not being enacted as the kind of mental spinning that we often feel when we're focusing in the mind itself.
Okay.
Okay, and then here's the second step.
Mm-hmm.
So now see if you can become aware of an energy that actually surrounds your body, that's present behind your body, that you enter into to some extent by moving your attention from the front body, from the front of the heart and from the front of the head to the region mm-hmm. behind your body.
Mm-hmm.
And from that place, ask for wisdom or ask for an answer. And then just wait without letting your mind spin too much.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And just notice what arises.
Part of the reason that I wanted to ask is because I've I've had a few experiences where I'm really excited about, I just want to say an idea, even though that sounds very wordy again. And then I start to feel kind of, I feel high from it. And so I think sometimes it's a matter of just trusting when that happens and also discerning which is which, if it's the heart-centered discernment or if it's just the spinning. So.
Yeah, and ideas are very alluring and
mm-hmm.
exciting.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about the discernment when you get a great idea is actually just to get into the habit of asking yourself, is this really true?
Okay.
Connecting to the heart and asking yourself, is this really true, or is this just something that my mind has come up with? And when you ask this question, see if you can not look for an answer in words,
mm-hmm.
Which is where we get into the spinning, but actually
okay.
See if you can get the if you can tune into the answer that comes as a sense of knowing. This is
okay.
really a this is a practice, Laura. It's actually something that we need to practice, and there'll just come a moment when you'll know it.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Thank you for that question.
Thank you for answering.
So there's a question that Deb just sent me from the webcast, and the question is, I've been working with my third chakra this week and sense a lot of fear, and especially fear around allowing Kundalini to arise. Great question. Can you provide some guidance? Yes, for sure. And yes, fear is one of the tendencies that is lodged in the third chakra. And the first thing I suggest is to actually let yourself breathe into this center and feel the fear. And as I'm tuning into your question, I'm actually feeling in my own body what that fear feels like in the center. And it's very important here to notice there are thoughts and stories that come up around the fear. And then there's also the contraction of the fear in the center. One of the things that is helpful when your fear is of the process itself is to, again, feel yourself surrounded by the energy of goddess, by the energy of Bhuvaneshwari, who is an incredibly holding embrace of energy, and imagine her as a kind of wideness, as an energy around you. And see if you can tune into the fear in your body. Don't try to make it go away. Just see if you can hold the energy of goddess as a kind of embracing wideness around your body. And feel the fear. And as you feel the fear, you might notice that it has certain stories to tell you. And it's sometimes useful to write them down. And then see if you can breathe into the fear, into the feeling of fear, in a very gentle way, not trying to make it go away, but letting the breath kind of move into the stuck energy, the hard energy of the fear. And see if your breath can just open it up a little bit. And if you can let the contraction, if you can let the breath move into the contraction, even just a little bit, while holding the sense of goddess energy surrounding it, it can begin to let the contraction, and my feeling is that a lot of the contraction is in your diaphragm. It's actually a physical contraction in the diaphragm, which a lot of us have, and we have it for many reasons. So I feel that it would be helpful for you to massage your diaphragm a little bit and to remember the diaphragm is that horizontal membrane that's just underneath just at the bottom of the rib cage. And to let the breath be a diaphragmatic breath so that it's not that you're trying to send the energy downward, but you're letting the breath actually expand to the sides so that the sides of the rib cage are opening and releasing a little bit with the inhalation. And then let the exhalation go on as long as you can until the breath, the inhalation wants to happen naturally. And this is what brings your parasympathetic nervous system online and which allows the fear that's in your body to start to release. So that would be my first prescription when you're feeling fear connected to the third chakra, to do this very skillful process of diaphragmatic breathing, which is not breathing down into the diaphragm, but actually allowing the sides of the rib cage to be opened with the inhalation and then letting the exhalation be as long as it can be until the inhalation just wants to come in on its own. And then you can ask yourself, what is the fear saying? What is the voice of the fear saying? And that begins to unpick it and begins in the process of meditation. It's very good to do this either in meditation or perhaps lying in Shavasana with your knees up, giving yourself time to breathe and actually notice the story that the fear is telling you, to notice when you felt it before, and then to have the feeling of being held by the wider energy of Goddess. And then bringing your awareness very gently into the felt sense of the fear and seeing if you can allow the contraction to just release a little bit. And this should start to release the physical experience of fear. I just want to say about Kundalini and the rise of Kundalini. The way we're practicing in this class is with the awareness and with the feeling that I call devotional, but which is actually a prayerful attitude in which we talk to the energy inside our body and really say to the energy, Goddess, I know that your intention is my freedom and love. Please show me how you're opening me to love and freedom. And really ask this question and notice how the energy will respond to this attitude. Because the more we can allow ourselves to recognize that the energy that's awakening within you is awakening for the sake of love and is the energy of love, the more we begin to recognize that we can open a little bit more and a little bit more to the experience. As somebody said on the listserv this week, Kundalini Shakti is the guru. And what the guru really is, who the guru really is the power within your awareness that only wants you to love and be loved, to know yourself as the deepest form of love. And even to have that awareness for a moment And then ask the Shakti in your body to show you what that means in this moment. It's going to begin to shift the fear, which honestly, and again I say this from my own experience, is not real, is not because something is going to happen that's going to be painful or difficult, but is that kind of primal fear that every one of us has inside our body, and which little by little this process and this practice can begin to free us of. So, Anne, thank you so much for this question. It's a beautiful question. So we can take one more question, and then I think I'll let you go on to the rest of your evening, and we can take other questions on the listserv and in the conversations that we're having on the listserv. So if anyone else has a question, you can press star 7.
Hi, Sally.
Hi.
Hi, Aaron.
Hi, Aaron.
Hi. I was just curious what you would suggest for working with feelings of like exhaustion or just feeling really run down. I'm wondering if it's practical to maybe like take a nap before trying to do like meditation if you're feeling really tired, or I don't know, just what kind of practical guidance you can give in that way.
Another great question. Well, the first question is, are you getting enough sleep? Sometimes when you're feeling exhausted and when meditation, it feels as though meditation is just making you sleepy, that can be a sign that you're actually passing through a stage of meditation. And, you know, when the mind starts to turn within, what we're used to doing when we turn within is going to sleep. So it's very helpful to just let yourself sit in that feeling of exhaustion and see if the meditation practice takes you beyond it. And just experiment with that a little bit. And if you really feel like you need to take a nap, then lie down, set the alarm for like 10 minutes, take a nap, and then sit up and meditate. I think it's different for all of us. Sometimes in my experience, what we think of as exhaustion is actually cured by sitting in meditation. And so it's helpful to actually sit in a meditative posture. And if you fall asleep, at least you're falling asleep in a meditative posture. So in other words, a lot of the meditative process is an experiment in understanding your own energy. Another thing I would say is to notice your diet. In other words, my own experience is that there are certain foods I eat. I mean, particularly things like oatmeal for some reason, or rice, grains, which just tend to make me sleepy. So I'll often, you know, and partly I think, you know, sleepiness is the result of digestive issues, and it's one of the reasons why it's sometimes suggested that we don't meditate after we've eaten. You know, that we meditate when our stomach is a little bit empty, not so empty that it's growling and we're starving. But it's what I'm saying is that it's actually an experiment. It's fine to take a nap if that's what it really feels like. It's what's necessary, and it's fine to also just see if you can sit through it. So I hope that helps, and I just like to suggest that you play with some of my suggestions and then write up on the listserv and, you know, tell me how it's going, and we'll see what, you know, we'll see what feels like the right thing to do. And I also want to tell you that in some of the traditions, especially the Sufi tradition, meditators never felt like it was a problem to, you know, to drink a little coffee before meditation. So although that sounds like a radical idea, it may be that you need some stimulus. And I also my intuition is that you should look into your diet and just make sure you're getting enough sleep. So how does that sound to you, Aaron?
Sounds great.
Okay.
I'll experiment.
Okay, great. Experimenting is always significant in this journey. So we're going to bring this call to an end in just a moment, but I'd like to ask you to just sit back for a moment or two and feel the presence of the breath. Feel the inhalation rising through the center of the body with Om Aim Hrim Shrim and flowing back down towards the base. See if you can just let the inhaled breath and the mantra draw your awareness up through the crown to the energy above your head, and then let the exhalation draw rejuvenating energy down through the crown, through your body, down to your feet. Not feeling that you're trying to, so to speak, make Kundalini rise. Just feeling how your every breath has the power to enliven your whole body. And how, as the mantra, which is filled with the power of love of Goddess, of Kundalini, draws your awareness upward and then allows the grace-filled power of the higher realms to flow down through your crown, down to your body. And fill you with that love, which is the creative power of this universe. Have a beautiful week. You'll be getting a homework assignment tomorrow. May Goddess bless us all. So much love. Namaste.